The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means potentially, there we go, that we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named, horrifically named podcast. But the QA is the important part, especially this week, because it's the last Monday of the month. We're going to break from our normal format. We're going to just kind of recoup for a little while, spend some time just hanging out, getting to chat, looking through. I'm already seeing some great names, some familiar names here in the chat. Zhao Botnik, Gabaletta, Simon says Hypno, Otaku, Hey, I'm Chris, Al Sabakli, Ron Guido, Dave Burns, Bullpup, Rico Man subbed again at a tier one sub, so thank you very much for the sub. And we're gonna hang out. Normally we have like a really structured news block. I say really structured. It's so easy to get me to go off on a tangent. This podcast is nothing if not rambling. But normally we do like a news block and then like the subreddit and look at the news there. And then we do the gadget block and talk about different articles or actual devices that I'm reviewing. And here we're going to just chuck all that out the window. I am literally wearing still what I slept in. This is my Wild Stallions t-shirt. I just threw the mic really close to my chin, so I don't know if that got obnoxiously loud for anyone listening. Apologies to anyone on headphones. we're going to keep this one a bit more relaxed. Hope everybody had a lovely and recuperative weekend. Maybe get a little rest over what has been a number of very sort of trying and stressful times. Obviously, there's been a lot of heavy political news, and I'm going to say we're probably going to avoid digging too deep while feelings are super raw. When it comes to some of the darker news that happens in our society or happens politically, I feel it's one of those opportunities for me to express what I feel my role is in those kinds of conversations. And when it comes to technology and gadgets and consumer electronics, I always hope that the people that enjoy my content sort of understand that my part in this is to empower people to tell their stories. Depending on whatever that situation may be, that's why I get so that's why I get so spiky and why I get so political about things like right to repair, net neutrality, broadband distribution, and the politics of regulating an industry like communications tech. It's not my part to stand up and tell someone else's story for them. It's my part to try and empower people to use these tools to capture their own moments, to preserve their own memories, and to tell their own stories. And that's about all I really feel I can contribute to whatever news might have broken over the weekend. So we're going to keep this a little lighter. If you're coming here and you're hoping to just nerd out with some folks, that's what I'm hoping our chat can resemble. So, knowing that when it comes to tech, I've got a chat room full of people who are good tech neighbors, I hope you'll join me in that mission. If you look around your family and friends and you see people struggling, if you look around your circles on social media and you see people hurting, reminding people that they have these tools, that they have these capabilities, that their reach extends farther than they probably realize. And helping them get more out of their purchases. Not like, oh, well, if you'd spent more and you got a really nice camera and you got mics, then you could do this and you could, make a documentary. There's so much more that we could be doing with what we already have. And I feel people, it really seems to me that a lot of people need to be reminded of that. So, what I also won't do this week is subject you to another Juan is Terrible at Games Steam Deck stream. I have it here. This thing has basically always been within arm's reach. But last Pajama Podcast, we strayed from the normal, like, hey, me just talking to the camera conversation. And I fired up Vampire Survivors for the very first time. And I've basically been playing that game and clones of that game almost completely nonstop. So if the chat slows down, I will subject you to my progress on Vampire Survivors, as I feel like this was a game genetically grown in a lab for Juan to obsess over in its clunky, classic, low-effort graphics to the progression tree as you go through different characters and you unlock different abilities. I will ramble on a lot if you let me. Dave was asking, is this going to be another Steam Deck stream? And yeah, I'm not going to subject you to all that. So, let's see. I wanted to, Ron Guido had a request for me to wear some low cut PJs, maybe something a little more suggestive. And I would just say, be careful what you wish for, Ron. Maybe next month that'll happen. Simon says, Hypno, a Steam Deck, you say? Have you guys heard of this thing? This thing called the Steam Deck? I don't know if you guys have heard of this thing. So let me just tell you, this right here, this is called a Steam Deck. And it's really cool. I mean, the entire podcast, I'm gonna have to not do that joke, because it's a terrible joke, and I love it. Dave Burns making fun of me for saying my normal podcast is structured. I feel that is absolutely appropriate for people to make fun of me. Oh, let's see. McCorcoran3 asking, hey all, what device is everybody rocking today with the stream? And I want to go through these because, again, like I was saying, this one of the reasons why I love hosting these chats on Mondays and why I've kind of built up my channel around this little sort of Twitch stream, I feel the reality of how we talk, I feel the reality of how we live with gadgets is substantially different than the entertainment we get talking about the newest gadgets, right? I feel like whatever's the newest and most expensive gets overwhelmingly lopsided coverage, but the reality, like the daily lived-in reality, is way more diverse. And so McCorcoran asking this, what phones are people rocking? We've got Raymondit. First reply, LG V30. What a killer classic phone. Great daily driver, excellent capabilities, baller headphone jack, nice design. I think it's a beautiful looking phone. I mean, immediately, right off the bat, of course people in my chat replying with more than just, oh, I have the newest iSam Apple. Let's see. Hey, I'm Chris, is rocking a Pixel 6 Pro. Otaku on the Note 22. Well, he's saying the Note 22 is on the charger. I am almost done editing. I've been saying this for so long. I'm almost done editing my look back at the Moto Edge, the Moto Edge Plus, now that I have the folio case and the stylus. Using that stylus, it's a wireless stylus. The phone has to charge the pen. I actually have just a little bit more buffer on the Note 22's less than stellar battery life. Because it seems whenever we have a wireless enabled pen, it's constantly talking to the phone and the phone is responsible for charging the pen. Things like standby time take a little but noticeable hit. And so I feel like the Note 22 is in very similar territory. It is charging its own accessory. It is constantly connected to that accessory. And we should have an expectation that that'll have an impact on battery life. McCorkran 3, LG and Pixels, that's what I see. Dustadore saying LG G8. Farhan, Note 8 via DeX. That is the right way to watch this stream. Anyone who's saying like, hey, I'm using the desktop mode on my phone gets extra kudos from me. Where did I lost Quixotic. Quixotic was saying Pixel 6 Pro. Who else? LG V60. Very good. Z Fold 3 from Gabaletta. Ooh, Simon says Hypno. He's saying his Honor Magic 4 Pro. Where's my Honor? My Honor's over here. Nope, that's my Neo. I have way too many silvery, plastic-coated, cased phones. There's going to be a video out on that soon, too. But I recently published just a field trip checking out the cameras on that. Dave Burns, nerding it out. Double plus good games. I had a V30 from launch until just this last month. And now I'm using an LG V60. If you can get your hands on a V60, the most recent updates for it have been stellar. It's just such a tank of a phone, and it's aging phenomenally well. McCorkran, that's exciting, double plus. Actually rocking the LG Wing today. Finally found my Wacom stylus, was with my laundry. Good, good, good. TED Talks Tech, wishing everyone a good morning. Dave Burns, one is better than David games and therefore can stream games if he wants to. I don't know that that's true, Dave. I don't think I am better at games than you are. I think I just got real obsessed with Vampire Survivors. Oh, hey, I'm Chris. I love this. My doctor showed me pictures of their son feeding raccoons and monkeys from their recent vacation. Awesome mood boost brought to you by a pocket computer. Again, capturing moments, preserving memories, telling stories. You've got a production facility in your pocket if you have a phone built within the last 6 years. I mean, I just can't tell you how capable these things really are, how much longer you can drive them, and how much more you can really get done with them. And it's all. I mean, it's not, oh, well, you know, you've got to buy the premium flagship to do stuff. Oh, it's pretty good. Twin Folk Tech saying, howdy, folks. Dave Burns, Juan's going to show off them calves. Check out these gams. Oh, no. Again, so I've been trying to get my soggy state back in shape. I've been doing like an hour low impact on the treadmill for the last couple of days. Back to just free weights, some light arm workouts, squats, lunges. And then I tried getting back just rudimentary core form for some of the step that I used to dance back in college. And let's just say it's real slow going. Like the rhythm is there. The muscle memory is super foggy.
And it made me really sad. Like yesterday I was just doing basic body rolls, like tuck, 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 cut. Tuck, 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 cut. And it was like, that was something that used to just be so ingrained, basic. I could kind of work out any rhythm in my brain. And here it's like, I just need standard eighth notes and I'm off. I just need standard eighth and it's wrong. I just need standard eighth notes and I did it. Now let's see if I can do it again and I can't. Just, oh man, getting that stuff back. So hard. Ooh, Dustadori, what was that I was holding in my hands? So I don't know if you guys have heard about this thing. This is an amazing piece of technology. It's called a Steam Deck. Now, you would think that that's like something to make like Asian buns, but no, it's actually a really sophisticated game. I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry. I'm going to keep making that joke, and it's the worst joke, and I think it's hilarious. I'm going to Andy Kaufman in my own stream. Like, here's a terrible, terrible joke that I'm going to do over and over and over again, and it's only funny to me. Like, I'm only doing this to make myself laugh. Ooh, Twinfold Tech is testing out the Moto Edge Plus. I'm anxious to see a few more folks trying this out. When I'm done with it, I'm going to try and send it out to a couple friends. Once I get this next video, I was like, I've got some B-roll to shoot. I want to shoot some better samples of Ready 4 now that I have that 4K portable display from YouPerfect. I just want to have some nicer things to show off, but like, I want to get this in the hands of a dude like Barry Johnson, right? Through the summer, before we get into the fall and we get all those new phone launches, this is exactly the kind of device, because Barry spent a lot of time with phones like the Note 22, so I think it would be a great kind of head-to-head to get his thoughts on what he's working on. Rami is using the Xperia 1 Mark IV, and I'm super jealous. I still haven't gotten back around to a retail unit on that. I'm talking to the folks at Sony just about some of the new software that might be coming. Like, I want to play with that audio editing software that wasn't available on the prototype Xperia that I got to play with. Just, I want it so bad. TED Talks Tech. Watching on a 32-inch 4K LG monitor plugged into the Mac Mini, still trying to figure out picture-in-picture. Is that a thing on Macs now? Because I know, like, picture-in-picture is apparently hard for an iPhone to do, which makes no sense. But I thought, you know, Macs would be better at doing, you know, picture-in-picture and stuff like that. Zabaknik on his S10, Ron Guido on his OnePlus 8T. Sammy, you still need to pick up a Surface Pen? My Surface Pen is charging. It's plugged into a cable, and I just almost ripped a dock off my desk. You don't have your Slim Pen for your Surface 2? My Surface 2 is also plugged in, and I don't want to rip it off the charger. You don't, your little notepad pen? I mean, it's kind of like the perfect pairing, is you have a little notebook and a little pen. It's pretty great. You should try it. I'm making fun of you, but I'm kind of not. let's see. Yeah, Raymond, I might hold off on an upgrade and just replace my battery again. I think that is such huge positive advice. If you have the facilities or if you have the infrastructure around you to get a good phone repair, I find it dubious that the way we talk about phones, where I was like, oh, it's got like 10% more CPU power. Look at these Geekbench scores. The GPUs are 15% more performant. Increasingly, I talk to people and I feel like they don't really want to change their phone. They just want their phone to perform more like it did when it was brand new. And to me, if you have the means, or you have like a good repair shop, accessibility, I should say, then getting a battery replacement and then rocking the same phone for like an extra 6 months, an extra year, makes so much more sense to me in the way that people talk about how they use their phones, especially if your needs really are basic and average, right? I get real pissy with people who talk about average consumers and then hold up $1,000 phones, because we know that's not average, and you need some darn good reasons to spend more than a couple $100 on a phone these days. But if your needs are lower level and you just want to keep at that same power performance threshold, save the cash and keep your phone out of recycling and landfill, you know, like get more. I get all liberal and liberal angsty about stuff like the rare earth elements that go into making our phone, the human labor costs that go into making phones. And if you can just swap the battery and rock that phone for even longer, again, keeping it out of garbage state, huge. It will always get the biggest thumbs up and kudos from me. Double plus good games. That is an excellent score, man. I got a new LG V60 and dual screen on eBay for $400. Definitely worth that price. You know what's hilarious is I was shopping for a spare dual display just because I'm nervous about. I used that dual display hard for the first year and a half. And then just to kind of minimize some of the wear and tear on my V60, I also got just a regular bumper for it. But I wanted to back up that dual display while there were still pieces out there. And if you can get it in a bundle, I think that makes more sense. I don't want to have to buy a whole extra V60 to get a spare dual display. But so often I would shop the dual display separate, and it would be more expensive than the V60 itself. So we're definitely getting to that end game where parts are dwindling. And now prices on things like V60s and dual displays, velvet and that dual display case, that those things are going to become increasingly rare, which means that the prices are going to skyrocket for the few people that are into that kind of a phone. It's so funny watching the ebb and flow, because, you know, whatever you value a used phone at is highly emotional. We were talking about that on the Discord yesterday. Like, there's a perception that OnePlus phones plummet in value. And all Android phones drop in value very, very quickly. But if you try and compare OnePlus against other manufacturers, you try and compare OnePlus against Samsung, and you're like, well, they start out a little cheaper, and then their used prices are kind of the same. So they don't really fall in value comparatively. They don't fall in value as much as Samsung. They're pretty close. So however you look at a phone and you think, well, this is going to retain value, it's like worse than buying a car. But it's interesting. We have this idea like OnePlus, those things devalue so quickly. And you're like, but they don't really devalue any faster than any other phone. So I guess it's just an emotional reaction to that brand name. Gormlord, I've got a Snapdragon 845, and I've been playing my PlayStation 1 library all weekend. I dig it. Oh, that's good times. I've only been dabbling a little bit more with emulation, because I don't know if you guys have heard of this thing. It's called a Steam Deck. I have a backup of like Nintendo carts, and so I've been going through and doing that. I haven't really dug much deeper, but there's this one PlayStation 3 game that I absolutely love, Dead Nation. I really wish it had ever gotten any kind of life outside of the PlayStation 3. I mean, I guess it was on the PlayStation 4 also. I guess I could have gotten it there too, but it just made me cranky that I bought it for the PlayStation 3 and then could never play it anywhere else. And the Steam Deck actually can kind of play PS3 emulation on games that are a little more arcade. Like, I wouldn't go hardcore. Like, something that was really taxing a PlayStation 3 obviously is not really going to play on a Steam Deck. But Dead Nation was this, I mean, it was a really graphically detailed game, but it's a top-down shooter. I love arcadey twin-stick top-down mechanics. And so it wasn't too demanding of a game, and it's choppy, but it does play on the Steam Deck. Blew my mind. Was not expecting that to work at all, let alone work as well as it was. Dave Bird's working on that dad bod. Yeah, I'm trying to move from dad bod to a father figure, so we'll see how that goes. I know, I'm way behind on the chat. Twin Folk Tech, Juan was stomping the yard. So in high school, I started really getting into dance. I kind of jacked up my knee a little in high school doing long jump. But the thing is, I was never going to be even a collegiate athlete. In Ohio, in high school, my freshman year, I was doing long jump, and I was jumping low 20s, like 20 feet and inches. And a scout from OSU, like, caught one of our meets, and was like, hey, this kid, if he keeps growing, and he really keeps developing, like, he could be a monster. Well, in high school, I was 5'6". Now I'm 5'8". Like, I stopped my freshman year of high school. So there was no hope of me ever really becoming a serious athlete. But I did have some pretty decent leg power. I was like, I was 130 pounds. I could max 330. But my arms were toothpicks, right? You know, I was just all legs. But yeah, I mean, I had a standing long jump of 7.5 feet. My sophomore year, I tweaked my right kneecap. It was like the patella kind of popped and then popped back in. I didn't shred my ACL. I didn't, like, there wasn't any like serious ligament damage. But part of my physical therapy was ballet. And I didn't know it at the time, but I never really went back to serious athletics. I kind of just kept going with dance. And the physical conditioning and a little bit of yoga, a little bit of Pilates. I was never super flexible, but I got really, really into dance. And so into my senior year of high school, we had moved to New Mexico, and there was a ballet folklorico troupe. And I just kind of went off the deep end. Body percussive rhythm clicked in my brain something hard. Tap, flamenco, folklorico. And in college, I was working flamenco footwork when the Black Student Union step team came in. And one of the people on that team was just kind of curious about some of the footwork that I was doing. It was like the flamenco class kind of ran up into the evening, and then they opened up the rehearsal rooms for other clubs and teams. And so I showed them a little footwork, and then they were like, hey, you know, do you want to stick around? And I got to sit in on one of their step practices. And then the next week we kind of did it again. Then I became sort of an unofficial token member of the BSU at UNM. And after that, like, a little splinter group formed, and we toured for about 2 years. So one of my buddies is actually in Stomp the Yard. I coached some of the rehearsals for Stomp the Yard. And the joke was kind of like, if you can't outstep the little pale skin guy, then you're probably not really going to make it into this movie. So none of my choreography is in that movie. Nothing I did was in Stomp the Yard. But I did work with a couple of the actors who auditioned for Stomp the Yard. And I was also sort of the shame point. Like, you got to be at least as good as that guy. And I was pretty good. My quick step was not bad. Members of my group made it into Stomp in Vegas, Step Africa on the East Coast. I never made it that far. My drumming skills were not up to par to be in a group like Stomp. But you know, I did learn a lot of their choreography. So, I mean, there's actually quite a bit of Stomp I can do. As long as you don't put broomsticks in my hands and I just replace it with clapping, I'm kind of on point. I can kind of make that happen. So, yeah, it's a really long, strange journey to get from there to here. And I want to get a little bit back to there because I liked that physical capability. Because it's not just like power or strength or speed. For me, it was more like total body awareness of my physical location in space. You know, you have an innate knowledge of where you fit in the universe, and you can navigate physically. I don't know how to explain it better with words, but it's sort of the appreciation that I've always had for that any kind of physical endeavor that also is a bit more on finesse than, say, like outright power. I don't have a frame built for power. I have pretty terrible joints, and I have a lot of arthritis. But getting back to detailed, careful, and calculated movement, that would be kind of fun. Dave Burns just writing a little encouragement here. The worst part of a fitness journey is the beginning. Start slow and make sure you stretch and keep your joints in good shape. If you can power walk on a treadmill, it's better for you than running on a treadmill. So yeah, I'm kind of doing roll step, really trying to do long stride, and I'm not trying to run. I did cross country, and I did a little, like I said, I was a long jumper in high school. I have really heavy footfalls. I have terrible form for a runner. So being as fragile as I am, I got to be really careful like how I get back into cardio. Yeah, it's pretty good times. Oh, man, I'm way behind on the chat. Let me try and catch up on this a little bit better here, too. Twin Folk Tech. If I didn't have a YouTube channel, I would honestly just keep my Pixel 6 for the full 5-year support cycle. I love that phone. I'm getting a few comments like that. It's interesting. I need to get a Pixel 6 video back out because the shape that it's in now gives me a lot of, it's encouraging to see where Google is going. And I think they're heading in a brilliant direction. The launch of the Pixel 6 was shaky. And I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But the commitments to support and updates and improvements have significantly changed the conversation on that phone. And it's definitely made me rethink some of the performance and optimization conversations that we've had on other manufacturers. Yeah, McCorkran, same thing. It blows my mind that we're even pretending to host conversations sooner. Michael writes, I feel like it takes me a year just to feel like I really even understand my phone's full capabilities. That's why I'm not into trade-ins. Like, anyone who says they can tell you about a phone because they used it for 2 weeks under embargo on pre-release software is either lying to you or is lying to themselves. Because the lived-in experience is phenomenally different than this sort of early sneak peek ratchet FOMO game that we play. I was the first one to tell you about it. Come check out my channel first. That's all you have to contribute to the conversation. You're literally just the tech equivalent of saying first. Aw, double plus good games. What? You're surrounded by some good people. I've been on Twitch for years, and this is quite frankly the most intelligent chat I've ever seen. I am not unique to Twitch. There are some really good folks streaming some really good content and some phenomenal communities that are built up around those kinds of conversations. Sometimes we're just a little harder to find, and we're always very appreciative of folks kind of giving us a shot and jumping in and joining these conversations and contributing. Because that's really, I feel like, the most important part is understanding your voice has power. And as I mean, you can see in this chat, we've got some powerful voices in there. Oh, Gormlord, spot on. I just put a new battery in my mom's S10. Still not getting great life. Anyone know why or have suggestions? Okay. First of all, great strategy. S10, baller year for Samsung. Optimization still might be a bit shaky depending on how recently you swapped that battery. Remember, it takes these phones like a couple weeks to kind of get back into it. But with a battery swap, I would also highly recommend just nuking the phone and starting fresh because it's much, much, it's going to be much, much easier to pinpoint any specific issues with performance. If it's a hardware issue, you've separated the software and the backlog and the cache and all the garbage that a phone collects over time. That would be again, it sucks because it's such like, you know, did you try turning it off and on again? You know, BS advice. But there's a reason why I kind of recommend that, even for some major software updates. You know, if you jump in Android generation and you want the best version of that operating system, you kind of want the phone to start building it from scratch, not trying to interpret all of the stuff that was on the previous software gen. It's a little different when we're talking about a battery swap, but battery conditioning works in a similar way. And then the other thing that's going to be a little tricky when we're talking about S10, I don't know that there's a good way to know the age and battery health of the cell. So, for example, if that's like a Samsung part that's been sitting in a warehouse for 3 years, then that cell can also be degrading over time, too. So that could also be a part of the issue. I'm not sure, like, if you go to a repair shop, how you might be able to, request, hey, the battery that you're putting into this, when was it made? We know Samsung and batteries. Tricky conversation. I prefer this not turn into a bomb. Oh, yeah, McCorcoran, it's nearly impossible to find an LG Velvet dual screen. And I'm so precious with mine because I have the pure white. That was that specialty edition that they put out for the South Korean model. So it's like I'm so careful in how I'm so careful to the point where whenever I dig into Velvet stuff, I almost always go to the T-Mobile Velvet, which is weird because that's a little different. That's the one that has the MediaTek, is that Dimensity 1000C. And you're like, if I'm going to do anything Velvet, I'm going to show it off on this phone because my jewel tone green with white dual display case is like, that is my museum phone. I wipe it with microfiber cloths and I put it in a special pouch and I keep it on the bookshelf. So bad. Just the white glove treatment of some phones in my collection, the Velvet gets that. Oh, it's probably not worth that level of consideration. Oh, Gabaletta, I'm so sorry to hear that. I have to send my Z Fold 3 to Samsung to get the inner screen protector replaced because no local repair shop have either the tools or the part to do the replacement. I know we're supposed to be hyped. And I'm not saying don't be excited or don't take care of your Fold 3. Because I'm sitting here in front of a Duo 2 and a Duo 1. Phones with displays on hinges that are built into the phone, I don't feel we're really anywhere near that being a mainstream idea. And your experiences, unfortunately, help reinforce a conversation on a lifestyle, durable companion gadget. I don't recommend the Duo to people who need to rely on a phone in every day, chuck it around, keep with you kinds of experiences. And I feel the Fold is similar for exactly what you're mentioning right there. Can you count on replacing a screen protector? And if you can't go to a shop, if you can't pop into a Best Buy, I don't feel that's a high level of support. I feel like that's something pretty basic, pretty accessible. And so for me, all of these things, I adore this mini folding tablet. This is a public beta. The Fold, wonderfully refined. Samsung has done some incredible things with software to break Android and make it work in a larger screen format. Still a public beta. And it's a public beta because it does not have the same kind of reliability, the same kind of durability, and the same kind of local accessible support that a regular slate phone might have. So I'm sorry to hear that that's been the experience, but I'm really hoping that, again, because you have the Fold, Samsung will be more aggressive about performing good maintenance on their crown jewel, high aspirational public beta product. Farhan, again, it's an infrastructure issue. when these things are more popular, the infrastructure will improve and repairs will become more, repairs will be easier and more accessible. But all of those things are, you know what I mean? It's chicken or the egg. Do you put the resources and infrastructure in place to maintenance folding phones before they've hit a certain saturation point? Well, that's very expensive. But we're talking about very expensive phones, so the cost of that phone should help subsidize the infrastructure required to support it. But this is also Samsung, and recently I would say their cost-cutting efforts are likely the reverse of that now. They'll be investing in the infrastructure for repair on a more ground level when more of those things sell. So now we have to see, what is the sales of that going to look like? The Z Flip sold significantly better than the Z Fold. So maybe that's where we'll see some of this expertise really trickle down into more local repair accessibility. Ooh, Fat Produce, that's a great question. Super curious if you can get TIE Fighter working on the Steam Deck. I need to give that a shot. I have never played TIE Fighter on anything other than like a proper joystick. So I think I would be really bad at that game on dual analog.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, Fat Produce, not, I was going to be a Buckeye. I was in Dayton, Ohio. So not Oklahoma State University. It would have been Ohio State. And so again, not like I have any, I graduated high school in New Mexico. I always have like this little soft spot in my heart whenever I see, you know, like Ohio versus Michigan. I got a root for the Buckeyes. We even used to make that weird like peanut butter chocolate candy Buckeye thing. I wasn't gonna get scouted. I wasn't gonna be an athlete at OSU. Just the fact that someone showed up and they were like, "Hey, yeah, this kid can jump." And I was like, "Hey, cool. Yeah, I'm a jumper." So that was enough stroking of my ego to be basically a lifelong. I could have been a dance contender. I mean, maybe I could have. I see, as I get a little older and parts of my body are falling apart and degrading. Let me just tell you, I'm in my 40s. It's interesting. Like if I think about what my career would have looked like, and it gives you like a very different perspective on things like professional athletes, like how criminal it is when we see leagues playing around with like health insurance for athletes. Like that should not be okay, especially in a country that doesn't have socialized medicine. Dance injuries were no joke. I had to see a doctor on campus because in the middle of a performance, I got this, it felt like someone had ice picked me in the lung. Like they had missed all of my organs and managed to shiv me with the teeny little like pinpoint of razor sharp white hot pain right into my lung. And it was just like apparently in the middle of a performance, because I'm stomping and I'm clapping, I'm jarring my body and I'm like smacking myself in the chest, rapid claps, lots of arm movement, lots of big arms. And I had just apparently ruptured. I had burst like just one teeny little pocket of those little sacs in your lung. That happened halfway through a performance. It's like I felt like I could only breathe on the left side of my body. And I still had 20 minutes of performance to do after that. And normally we do like curtain calls and we do encores and like we finish the show and I stumble myself off and I'm like You know, like that feeling you get when you stand up too quickly and you get kind of dizzy and like all the sparkles happen. I finished the show sparkles. Like I couldn't see. And I was so out of it, like I basically collapsed backstage. My wife like had to like, she wasn't my wife at the time. Marie was my girlfriend at the time. But like she had to help like hold me up until the other performers could get back there and like walk me out to a car. And the next day I went and saw a doctor. I probably should have gone to an urgent care that night or an emergency room that night. That was dance. That was a dance injury. I torqued a shoulder doing ballet lifts. My knees are not in great shape from doing all of the flamenco. Like what you do in flamenco, it's called a golpe or a planta. And it's like you're digging your heel or the ball of your foot as hard as you can with the full leverage from your knee. So like if you know this is your leg and you bend at the knee like that, it's almost a 90 degree up, and then you whip it as hard as you can down into the ground. I've mentioned this before in other podcasts and stuff, but I had Folklorico boots, which have these heel and toe taps. The taps are all made from individual little drywall tacks, teeny, teeny, tiny little metal tacks that are all just hammered into the heel and the toe of the boot. It's not like the tradition, but you're kind of not taken seriously until you've smashed all of those into one smooth surface. You're just smashing your feet into the ground as hard as you can until you've made that one continuous smooth plate. And I did that. I did that to two pairs of boots, you know, like cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, just over and over and over and over until those things were totally, like, smooth, and they weren't individual nails and tacks anymore. So then you go and see a football player, you know, like, that's just a completely other, when linesmen collide, it's like, they're surviving multiple car crashes every couple of minutes, getting hit like that, you know, with pads and you know, special helmets and stuff makes it even worse because it allows the person doing the hit to hit even harder. And to sit there and, you know, say like, this is a game. It's a super profitable game. And those bodies are being destroyed. Like, I could not have survived a career in dance, especially now I deal with psoriasis. The worst part of that inflammation is joints. So yeah, I get like weird, patchy and scabby skin. That's annoying. It looks gross. I mean, it messes with my hair. It's no fun. Itchy skin is never fun. If you have eczema or psoriasis, like that's a bummer. But if you have something that's inflammation and the inflammation goes to the inside of your body, arthritis sucks. It's so bad. That's nothing compared to like the toll taken on like a basketball player. Constantly back and forth on wood court, you know, like it doesn't matter how good your shoes are, you're going to destroy all of those joints. So yeah, it just could have been a dance contender. That was a really long rambling way of saying like, probably not. My best hope would have been getting a couple good years of performance in and then becoming like a choreographer, and they don't really make money. You know, like I would not have had a sustainable life and career. It's just so bad. Sorry, I don't talk about that probably as much as I probably should have. Sal Botnick, again, you are grossly overestimating my physical ability. Well, not the athlete you were looking to become, but fighting, football, racing would all be possible as a short person. Like, I think, again, I'm so glad I didn't pursue that because I now know sort of more what my body is capable of. And again, I was a little kid, I did Taekwondo and I had some pretty good kicks. I did one kickboxing class where I very quickly discovered that I am an amazing fighter, but my main weakness, the only thing I can't handle. So, you know, like, you know, I'm getting in there, I've got the basics, I've got my arms up. Apparently, my main weakness is being punched or kicked. So as long as I'm not punched or kicked, I'm indomitable. I'm basically the best fighter on the planet. I took one shot. It was like, I think the guy was actually like kind of aiming for like a kidney or a liver shot or something. He caught me in the floating rib and I was done. One unguarded strike to my core. And you're like, oh yeah, no, this is not for me. So Zabotnik, thank you very much for, I mean, like, again, that's such an encouraging, I love the encouragement, but at this stage of my life and knowing what I was good at, and from a very small number of other life experiences, I very quickly realized what I'm not good at. That was definitely the thing. Oh, Andrew, I know a bunch of people like that, though. So, Fat Produce, I had some weird overlap between football and band in my freshman year of high school. Marching in the halftime show with the trombone and football pads was awkward. We had a bunch of people like that, though. Again, that's what I loved, especially in Ohio, because there was a little bit more of this, like, school spirit, and we would do bonfires and pep rallies. There wasn't as stringent a barrier between some of these groups. So we had drama nerds that used to hang out with, like, the athletes. We had football players that were a part of the band. It was such a great kind of cross-collaboration. And I remember, like, my sophomore year of marching band, we had, like, three members of the football team that would go out in halftime. So, you again, like you were saying, you're out there marching with your trombone and your pads. But, like, that was, like, a school spirit kind of a thing. That was, like, a we're really doing this together kind of a thing. And you know, we would make fun of each other, but it was, like, we were our crew. So the footballers could make fun of the weird theater geeks in our school, but they would, like, viscerally show down with other schools that would make fun of kids in our school. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That, to me, is, like, that's what high school should be. You're figuring out who you are. You're trying to figure out what you like, and you want to sample all of this stuff. And it makes me sad because, like, my daughter isn't going to get the same kind of experience. Like, she's six, and we were looking at one of the soccer camps, and for 6 and 7 year olds, the parents are already acting like that's pro youth Olympics. I mean, like, they're barely better than playing magnet ball, where all the kids just swarm the ball. And the parents are already acting like they're specialized. This is going to be their life track. And, like, I can't subject my daughter to that. So, again, because daddy used to be a dancer, I'm going to try and push her more into performance like that for physicality. And then maybe once she kind of picks up a little bit more physical discipline, then we can talk about martial arts. I cannot put her into soccer camp that's already acting like, you know, by the time you're 10, oh, I guess it's all over. Like, that's not how life should work. Double plus good games. There are so many OU, OSU universities out there. Correct. Oh, Zombie Abercrombie. I caught this on the Twitch. I'm not catching up to the chat. You guys are way ahead of me. What do you call a robot zombie that bites you? A terabyte. I like it. That's good. That's definitely a keeper. Ooh, Sammy has similar knee issues. Dude. Ugh. Where your kneecap quickly dislocates. It's called chronic patellar subluxation. My doctor did not talk to me like any kind of intelligent individual. He was like, yep, your kneecap popped out and popped back in. So that's all I've ever really, like, when I tell those stories, it's all I've ever really described. Oh, Simon says hypno. Totally. Soccer killed my ACL. My dad had to have reconstructive surgery. He was a soccer player when he was younger, and then he was a marathon runner when I was a kid. And dude, Man, that stuff is scary. I and knocking on wood, I'm dealing with arthritis, and so far that can be controlled medically. I've not gotten to a point where I have had to chat about surgeries. My first surgery, funnily enough, might end up being my shoulder. Like I said, I torqued it once doing lifts in ballet. Let me tell you, ballerinas are hardy, hardy women. Like, even when they look all, like, light and delicate and compact, you are picking up a skeleton full of muscle. They are not light. But your job as the male dancer is to make them look like they can defy gravity. So it's a completely different kind of, like, it's not like a jerk, you know? It's like you've got to float them into the sky and return them to the ground as if they had no mass at all. And I torqued this shoulder doing one. And I probably didn't do the right kind of therapy or the right kind. I mean, like, I was right back in way faster than I should have been. And now this grinds and like, I can even feel it now. Yep, 3 points. Click, 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 click. So funnily, for my hip not being great, my knees not being great, my ankles actually not being great, the first thing that I'd probably need to have surgically worked on might be this right shoulder. Fat Produce, my cardio is sucking in my gut constantly. I was having difficulty fitting into some of my shorts, and it's hot, and I don't want to buy new shorts. I really don't want to buy new, bigger shorts. So it was definitely time for me to be a better me when it came to physical activity and eating. Oh, twin folk. Yeah, you got to look at something else. I can't really run anymore because I broke both my ankles and my right foot skateboarding back in the day. And ever since, my ankles have been super weak and I'm insanely accident prone doing anything but a light jog. Whoa, boy, howdy, don't do running. Especially on something so fragile but necessary, like an ankle. Look at cycling, look at swimming, and then again, sort of stretching and strengthening exercise. Yoga, Pilates might be a better fit. Again, I am not a doctor, so don't take anything I say as any type of credible advice, but those would be the avenues that I would start looking at. Building up the muscle around those joints, that's kind of what I'm trying to get back to with my knees and my ankles. So I'm walking, I'm not running. But I definitely need to get a new bike just to kind of further strengthen up my quads and my hamstrings and my calves. And then from there, it's, as much as I hate it, because I'm really not super flexible, it's like I've really got to start breaking into more yoga. Resistance, body weight. Like, I can plank for a decent amount of time for a dude who's not in great shape, but I've got to be able to do more than that. Like, I've got to work on all the other surrounding muscle groups. So that's yeah. Zalbotnik, dude, I know that feeling. Getting towards your 40s sucks. I jumped from a wall the other day. The kind of 20-year-old would fly over. It took way more of my body than it should. I was walking with Lex. She was walking on a wall, and we're just kind of bouncing around. And I'm walking behind her, and I just kind of hop down. We're talking, like, maybe 4 bricks, you know, little red bricks. Not like cement blocks. 4 little red bricks. And I land in just that way where pain rippled, like, right into my nether region. And I had to stop for a second because I did not absorb the impact of that landing. It all just, like, oh, you might split in half. Hold on, breathe for just a second. My daughter's like bouncing off around the park. I'm like, okay. So I definitely feel that. I love it. From Steve, Q3 Becker, I really wish most techies wouldn't parrot the same drivel the early non-Sam Apple reviewer years after the release of a phone. Reviews years after the release of a phone. You know, it's kind of, I feel like there's this thing that's changing. I don't know if you guys have been like catching some of the bigger channels. I really don't watch videos from people with millions and millions of subscribers anymore. But it's interesting watching how some of them have been getting a bit more defensive at the same time that they're still trying to play the same algorithm game. We know that mostly Apple people watch these videos, so we're going to pat them on the back and tell them they're clever. But here's a random tweet talking about how much traffic my Sony videos get. There's this weird defensiveness that they're trying to claim a different kind of conversation. They're not just chasing viewership, but at the same time, we see behavior that would indicate otherwise. I point back to the Surface Pro. Microsoft puts out a tablet, Generation 1, gets slaughtered. And largely on the back of Windows 8 being very unfamiliar and being more tablet-y in operation, was not a great UI for desktop computing, but I really liked Windows 8. And it was a huge step in the right direction for encouraging other interactions like modular, portable laptop-tablet interfaces. Well, by the end of the first generation of Surface Pro, as the Surface Pro 2 was getting ready to come out, a lot of YouTubers sort of changed up their tune because they still wanted to get access from Microsoft. So it went from being like, oh, this is a garbage product and who could use this and no conveyance to, you know, the Surface Pro kind of changed my... It's a lot more elegant than I thought on its first impression. And by the Surface Pro 3, Microsoft had put so much money into marketing that consumers were interested in the Surface Pro 3. And well, now tech reviewers can't just pan the gadget outright because other people were using it and had positive experiences with it. And so the tail has always wagged the dog. If another brand comes up and starts getting a lot of positive attention from consumers, like people are really buying the product, tech reviewers will change their tune. Suddenly, oh, well, like a Pixel has sold way more than ever before. You know what? I guess it is a good phone. I guess my first impressions weren't complete. Wouldn't you know it, it totally won me over through pure meritocracy, not through viewership and ad revenue. Oh, no, no, no. The popularity of that isn't what changed my mind. It was purely the meritocracy of the product improving. So it's kind of tricky, you know? It's why I feel like our conversations need to lean more heavily into listening to those people around us. It's why I'm off the bandwagon of, you know, even if you only have low-level basic needs, you need to buy the premium-tier flagship for the gooder HDR in your photos. Because no one I talk to cares at all about that if they're shopping $300-ish for a phone, right? And in fact, I make people even more excited when I show them, hey, your old phone was really expensive. A new phone at like half the price is gonna be more powerful. So don't spend the same amount of money, spend less. And it's still gonna be an upgrade. You know, if you went 3 years on your phone, that mid-ranger conversation is so brutal right now. And that's what needs to change. What needs to change is this relationship between content creator, reviewer, and algorithm determining popularity before people even really have a chance to see if they like the thing. Because I guarantee you, if you put the keyword Sony into a video versus like the keyword OnePlus, you're going to see different metrics of algorithms for what communities of people will find that popular. Your video is judged before it has a chance to be viewed by people in this tech community. Russ9123, I wish I had a better answer for this. Juan, how do you preserve the battery of the phones that you do not use often? So unfortunately, I've got a number of phones on my bookshelf that I have not done a very good job of preserving. But the general idea is semi-regularly, every couple of months, I go through and just try to top off batteries a little, keeping them floating in that kind of 50 to 70% battery range, and then letting them kind of coast until I feel like I need to top them off again. A bunch of phones. Like, I for a reviews, no, a Slick Deals video, we were talking about Amazon, and I pulled out my Fire Phone. I hadn't plugged that thing in years, and obviously it was totally dead. Like, all you could get was a minor, a tiny little buzz from the haptic motor, and then the screen never even lit up. So that phone is gone. Like, it's just basically irrecoverable at this point. That's the best that I've got. You know, you just kind of want to babysit them. It takes so much effort. It's so much energy. But, like, you know, I've got a shelf full of old Lumias, and, like, hell, I'm going to let those things die. You know, like, they're all functional still. Not in the best shape, because I really did use them and I beat my 1520 to hell. But I do kind of top them off from time to time just to give them keep the battery cells from completely failing. Oh man, sorry. Let me try and catch up on this chat a little bit. This has been a lovely conversation. I really appreciate y'all kind of sitting in and taking the time with me here. Oh, some conversations on getting a Duo. The Duo One, if you can track one down, really, really solid. The most recent, the June update was huge on the Duo One also. And it's great horsepower. I know when they went on fire sale, you could find like the 128 for like under 400. Again, it's a great way to test drive a folding tablet concept. Would I recommend it be everybody's daily driver phone? Probably not. Simon says, Hypno, the Duo Hinge is an amazing piece of engineering. Great device, but I'm always terrified of dropping it. Yeah. And I haven't found a great case. So I've gone through two really cheap cases on my Duo 2. Nothing that I feel I can rely on. I don't like the bumper strategy. Microsoft's bumper is hot garbage. I don't like that at all. And my Duo 1, I just have a skin on it. I don't even keep a bumper case on this. So these are largely low impact portable tablets. They get a ton of use around the house. I like propping them up. I love putting like a recipe on one screen when I'm cooking in the kitchen, a recipe on one screen while I'm streaming a video on the other. Especially like it's almost always on a Duo that I'm watching, like Gadget Goddess or Easy Computer Solutions, those guys. Because I'm almost always cooking when they're streaming. It's also one of the reasons why I don't jump in on their streams. I bet you if I asked that they'd say, hey, yeah, you can join. Come on in. Let's chat. But it's almost always during our cooking and dinner time. So instead, I've got them on a Duo and I'm watching that way. Oh, Kappa Cash coming in a little late, was tied up at work. But hey, I'm glad you made it, man. This is great. Oh, and Twin Folk, that is a great question. I don't know if you guys have heard about this thing. It is an incredible feat of portable computing. This is basically a mini PC. I'm not going to do that, sorry. I love it. Oh, Kappa Cash, welcome to the 40s club. Dude, it's so rough. I'm way behind on this chat. I've really got to catch up. Oh, sorry, Twin Folk Tech had to explain the joke. Barry was like, do you not know what a Steam Deck is? We're listening to Al Juan speedran knee replacements. I hope not. I saw what my dad went through getting his ACL done. I really hope. Knock on wood, man. I haven't had anything too disastrous like that. I just, man, that freaks me out. So bad. And Double Plus gain, this is exactly what I was talking about, because I know you guys are way ahead of me in this conversation right now. One of the biggest issues is how the league treats them and their injuries. What was the show The Rock was on HBO? Ballers. Like, the whole last season turned into like this really interesting. So it started out as kind of like a gimmicky comedy, sort of like, I can't remember the name of that show, but it was about talent agents in Hollywood. But Ballers was sort of like that, but for sports agents and managers. And it was sort of a goofy, funny show, like not a sitcom, not that gimmicky, but by the last season, it got real heavy. Like, this is an aspirational piece about protecting the legacy of football and athletes and stuff. And you're like, yeah, this isn't cool, man. This is a game. And this is a game where we're expecting people to, like destroy themselves, but thank you for your service. Now that you're out of the game, we're going to ignore that you ever existed. And I have a hard time with that. It takes a lot of the fun out of football. When you see, like, well, first of all, they get all these great, like, tax breaks. They're not-for-profit entities that profit billions of dollars. They get all this local money from taxpayers, and then they get to just put that money into the hands of already ultra-rich people. And then none of that money goes to supporting the players later on in life. Again, it's like I have a hard time just sitting down and watching a football game. Because it's like, yeah, that person just took a bad hit. That person's getting carried out on a stretcher. That person just, like, knocked themselves out. They have a concussion. That is going to impact them for the rest of their life. And there are a bunch of people up in the box seats that are, like, clapping and laughing with champagne glasses. And you're like, I don't like the optics on that. And it makes me really uncomfortable to buy a bunch of sports merch, buy a bunch of football team jersey stuff, and support my team when I know my team isn't supporting the players. I get, again, the liberal angst comes out. Twin folk, crouching Juan, floating rib. Rico Man, see me, you took it farther than I did. Rico Man says, I've done one charity boxing match, never again. I've only ever done light competition sparring. So, like, points in Taekwondo, that is not a fight. That is a tactical game of like, tic-tac-toe. It's block, 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 strike. Oh, you tagged me. Cool. 1 point for you. I mean, you don't even really get the heart rate up like a proper boxing match. What was it? It was CES 2 years before the pandemic. I was out there with Newegg, and they had one of those new, like, virtual boxing trainer setups. So it's like it's a bag. It's one of the vertical bags on with a bunch of sensors inside of it. And it links up to data on a computer, but then also Peloton-style training. And this woman was there as their, like, main demonstrator, and she was just... like, she looked like she had been carved out of granite. She was, like, that big around, but, like, you could see every ripple of muscle fiber. And she's just doing, like, squat, hook, jab, 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 jab. And her form was impeccable. And so there was another, I want to say, was it someone from CNET? I can't remember. But there was another tech outlet dude in front of me just kind of doing one of the entry-level workouts. And he's kind of doing these, like, pushing from his shoulder punches into the bag and, like, oh yeah, I could see that would be, like, a real workout. And so they glove me up, and she was like, okay, so we're just going to do a total strike. So, like, for this period of time, you've got to see if you can get, like, 200 jabs on this bag. And I'm like, oh, that's, like, way harder than what you gave the last guy. Okay. So, like, Taekwondo from when I was 9 doesn't help you there. But, you know, I'm a dancer. I can kind of copy physical movement. And I just start pop, 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 pop. It was only, like, 3 minutes of bag work. And I couldn't stand. Like, I still had to shoot. This was at a Pepcom. I still had to shoot the rest of the CES Pepcom floor with my producer at Newegg. And it took me minutes before I could talk. So if you did a charity boxing match You did way more than I've ever been able to accomplish in a boxing situation. It is so brutal. Again, I feel like if I wanted to get myself into like hardcore shape fast, something like cardio boxing would probably wreck me. But I just remember, man, it was just a couple minutes of bag work. And I finished with 4 seconds to spare. I got the number of jabs that I needed on this bag, and then could not make words for almost as long afterwards. It was so bad. Russ 9123, Juan, 100% offense, 0 defense. It's like I'm not even a glass cannon. I'm like a paper cannon. It's so bad. I might get a good shot in. I can mimic what a good punch or a good kick looks like, but I'm not going to be able to take any damage. Oh, Simon says hypno. They may be dancers, but they're our dancers. Absolutely, dude. Oh, double plus. Seriously, dude. Girl soccer is bananas. So, again, because she's six, a lot of the camps are still co-ed. Because, you know, six-year-old boy, actually, for a six-year-old, she is way bigger than most of the other kids her age. And actually kind of gets her in trouble because people think she's older than she is. She's very young for six, emotionally and social interactions and that kind of development. She's whip smart and articulate, and she's already reading chapter books all on her own. So she's very, very tall for her age, and she's very articulate for a six-year-old. So everyone assumes she's like eight. And it gets her into a ton of trouble because she still acts like a young six-year-old. But to walk into soccer camps for kids and then see like parents acting like these kids are already on their chosen career path just blows my mind. Oh, Trey, that's awesome. My 7-year-old started karate 3 months ago and has really impressed me. The sensei is old school, yells a lot, but is fair. The first activity she really focused and paid attention in. We need to find a good dojo. I'm really leaning towards something like jiu-jitsu. Like, again, I just look at my daughter's temperament and I think about what kind of discipline, physical discipline, would make sense for her. And then something practical, like, you know, she's a woman coming up in the 21st century. In my brain, I just kind of feel like jiu-jitsu balances the right kind of core strength and flexibility training with discipline, that kind of physical discipline, and then also with a philosophy that also dovetails really lovely with things like yoga. Like so many high-tier jiu-jitsu martial artist practitioners also kind of become like yogis in the later stages of their life. So I feel like there's a commentary and there's a philosophy behind that that would definitely be a good fit for her temperament. Oh, Dustadori, my high school here in San Diego was similar. I was an art student and played football my senior year. Other football players were in choir, show choir, folklorical, and all that. The experience of being an athlete and an art kid and a heavy metal kid and a nerd was interesting to navigate. That's totally like what my vibe was. I liked being in locker rooms and being an athlete. I wasn't great, but I enjoyed it. I was a theater kid. I was a dance kid. I was a photo nerd back when we had to develop our own film. I was a musician. I mean, like, that's, to me, that I actually got myself in trouble my senior year of high school. I was doing almost like 20-hour days trying to keep up with everything because I wouldn't let an activity go. I couldn't say no. I mean, like, I was just so thirsty for every new little experience. Oh, Steve, that's cool, man. My knees also love to pop out. It was annoying when I was under 23 years old, but I had it happen last winter and it was hurting for months. Went to a doctor and I had enough of it and they said to do knee strengthening exercises. Again, flexibility and strength training on that kind of stuff I feel it helps me. And I used to do a lot of like rubber band work too, you know, like wrap your ankle and then like try and draw the alphabet with your toes, then wrap and then try and do a very limited range of movement, but very specific movement with my knee. And then you just building up all those tiny little muscles around the knee, around the ankle, sort of the muscles around my hips. Back when I was in better shape, that kind of stuff helped tremendously. So TED Talk Tech has been ruling the fitness channel. We have a little fitness Discord. I have not been contributing as much as I should be. Y'all making some heavy excuses about why you're not all posting in the Fitness Fanatics channel. You know, this is fair. Zhao Botnick, isn't it your biggest problem the fact that you sit a lot? It might be the big problem for our generation. I sit all day at work, in the car, and at home again. Working out for a couple of hours isn't enough to compensate. It definitely contributes, and we have to take the time. So again, I mean, like, if I edit and shoot and write all day, taking the time to balance that out means I've got to sacrifice time somewhere else. Now, for me, a lot of that was, I don't want to sacrifice my time on the couch watching some TV, and I got to get away from that. So now, I mean, like, if I'm just on a treadmill, okay, I can put my show on and throw on some earbuds and just kind of keep up with it. If I want to play some games, I got to be able to move it to something that's a bit more treadmill adjacent. But it still takes up, like, family time, or it takes up recreation time. It's like, we are so limited for time right now. I completely, like, vibe with that comment, because where do we just fit it? If I've got to go down and do a studio shoot, I'm going to be in the car for almost 3 hours driving around in LA traffic. I feel that in my hip when I get out of a car. And that's just 3 hours of driving, right? Imagine someone who's in the car all day, every day. What does that do to your body? I think the worst experiences I had, I was working at a bagel shop. And we didn't really have a lot of floor mats. And so much of it was just like standing on hard tile. And you don't realize how terrible that is for you until you've been doing it for a while. It destroys your flexibility. It like grinds your joints. It messes up your feet. It doesn't matter how well padded your shoes are. So many people in like restaurant jobs like that end up with like plantar fasciitis and issues with their feet. Like, it hurts your ability to stand. And then you got people complaining, like, oh, they think they deserve more than $7 an hour. Like, yes, that is time out of my life, and it's destroying my body.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay, either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions. And of course, any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos. But if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
I bruised a rib washing dishes, just getting trays out, and I slipped. And I caught myself under my right armpit, right up in between. It was high up. It was right up in between two ribs. And it's the same side that I had my dance injury on. And that hurt. I mean, I was like purple for a week. I have, they're kind of hard to see now. They've kind of faded. But I've got a slash on my hand here. You can see kind of the dark pock mark, but then there's like another ribbon slash off of that. That came from a pizzeria. I had scars all up and down my arms from working ovens when I was working at a pizzeria. I mean, like, that stuff breaks you down. It's not football. You're not getting into car crashes every couple of minutes, but working a fast food gig is brutal. And if you're on an assembly line, like, so the pizzeria I worked at did like salads, subs, and pizzas. And if you're working the subs counter, it's like, it's not tremendously different at rush than if you were doing a component assembly, working on a smartphone assembly line. You are in this one little space, and you're grabbing all of these things and shoving, and grabbing all of these things and shoving. And you're doing this for hours. On your feet, planted, hunched over. It is not an ergonomic workstation. That station is not built to facilitate you. That station is built to make a sandwich. And if you don't fit that station great, then you have to contort yourself to make that sandwich. I hated working the subline. I am almost peak of the bell curve, boring average. Almost everything in life is built for a dude about my size. I even fit comfortably into the backseat of most Japanese compact sedans. Like, this is kind of the best place to be. I love it. I'm not so tall that I'm like bonking my heads on things. I'm not so short that I need help reaching top shelves in most situations. Brilliant. Working the sub counter at that pizzeria was hell. I don't know who that thing was made for. It was not made for me. It was made to store sandwich fixings, and that was it. So I have almost zero chill and zero patience for people that like besmirch the fine career paths of fast food employees. Those are people that are grossly spoiled, have no life experiences, have been pampered their entire lives. Anyone who complains about like, well, they think it's a fast food job. I think anyone who ever posts that on social media should be apprehended by the police and forced to work a month in a Subway. You know, like, can you survive 2 weeks at a Wendy's? Sir, this is a Wendy's. Can you last? Because if you're complaining about other people trying to make a living wage off of flipping burgers, I know for a fact that you cannot hang. sorry, I'm skipping through some of the section. People were talking about other content creators and stuff like that. Hold on one second. I got to get an extra drink of water. I'm just going to mute real quick so you don't hear me slurping too bad here. I get super cranky about stuff like that. Funny you brought that up. The Verge just did an article praising the Pixel 5 design, calling it the last of its kind. All of a sudden, it's a good design, but before that, they called it stale and outdated. And I feel like that's... I'm not trying to specifically call out individuals. I feel I can mention stuff like this because it's just a general trend. Increasingly, like after I had that one little mini back and forth with Austin Evans... and Austin like showed up in a video wearing one of my merch shirts after I called out his Xperia 5 video. It's just sort of a sick feeling getting into the drama. I want to call out the trend. I'm not as interested in calling out the individual content creators that I feel are contributing to the trend because I feel the trend is more important than any one individual. But that's a perfect example of that trend in action. It's totally accessible to make fun of the Pixel. Now, why is it totally okay to trash the Pixel in a review? Because there are fewer Pixel fans. You will upset fewer people, and the people you upset are going to rage watch, hate watch your content. So you're still going to get the clicks. You're still going to get the views, but all of the other people that are into Samsung and Apple and other more popular brands, you're going to stroke their egos. So it's this insidious back and forth. And now that we've lost some of this market position, things like smaller premium phones, like even Apple doesn't really sell that many of the iPhone mini. This is a category that is increasingly eroding. Even though so many people say, like, hey, man, why don't you make a really great small form factor phone? And you're like, well, because it's kind of hard to make it the exact same as the bigger phone because you have space constraints, which means you've got to charge more for it if you want the same stuff, or you've got to deal with compromises, like other features that aren't really a part of that. Well, once we get a step removed from that and people start joining a conversation to say like, hey, that was actually a really cool phone. Well, now wouldn't you know it? Hey, you know what? The Pixel 5 was more elegant than we thought it was on first impressions. We had to trash it because it had the same camera sensor as a $1,000 iPhone 12 Pro. And that wasn't good enough. If you remember, I think it was the S21 Ultra. Was that the camera, the review that they were talking about cameras? And Apple and Samsung had moved up to larger image sensors. It's not even worth bringing up the Pixel, except that we're going to bring up the Pixel just to tell you that it's not worth comparing the Pixel, right? Like, you could just show us the images. They didn't, because the images would have been perfectly competitive against the iPhone 12 Pro Max with the larger image sensor. The 12 Pro Max image sensor was actually closer to the Pixel 5. It was nowhere near the size of the S21 Ultra. But they also conveniently left out the 12 Pro. The 12 Pro and the Pixel 5 had basically the same main camera image sensor. So where is this objectivity? Where is this review consistency? It's not there because The Verge knows their audience. That's the game. You play the game. What's going to get us more clicks? What's going to get us better time on site? What's going to get us more video views, longer video views? And then we package all that data. And we present that data to advertisers and to sponsors and to people to collaborate with. And then we make more money. And now it's okay to come back and say the Pixel 5 was kind of cool. Now it's okay to be a little nostalgic for a phone that you panned when it first came out. Ah, Barry Johnson. I still love my Duo 1. It's such a... I like the Duo 1 form factor better than the Duo 2. Just the Duo 2 is such a nice upgrade for all the performance and other stuff. I never use the cameras on the Duo 2, so I kind of wish there was a version of the Duo 2 that was more like this Duo 1. Yeah, it's like Google's not supposed to win. I know, Coppa Cash, man. It's the game. This tech conversation is way less fun when you see how obvious the game is. Barry Johnson, thank you so much for that. That's all you had to say, Juan. That link will be sent your way every live stream. I figured you were cooking. And again, this is kind of precious for me. Like, In our household, in our family, I enjoy cooking. My wife is a pretty good cook. She actually can put together a really nice meal. She does not enjoy it. And so because she doesn't enjoy it, and the cooking and the structure and the timing, getting everything out while it's hot, putting a plate together stresses her out, she doesn't think she's a good cook. I like that. To me, that's kind of a zen. When I've got like 3 burners on the stove going and something going into the oven and I'm chopping some veggies over on the side. Like, to me, that's Tetris. That's flow state. I love it. And so like, I get all that stuff going and I've got you guys in my ear, you know, like I'm listening to Barry and to Gadget Goddess and LaShawn and Tech King Mike and Easy and I'm sorry, there's like a whole crew. That to me, it's like, I'm hanging out with some buddies, I'm drinking a beer and I'm putting together a kick-ass meal. And to me, that's just like, that's the best way to walk out of my office and still be kind of in the community, but I get to just vibe. Right. So I try not to jump in on too many other people's live streams and stuff, 'cause I feel like I just suck the air out of the room. Like, yeah, I routinely talk for well over 2 hours at a clip, and I don't like killing the vibe of someone else's show just so I can ramble on or about the things that I already soapbox about. But I really do. I should make more of an effort to jump in because I like hanging out with people, but I also like hanging out with podcasts. Like, I'm hanging out with my pals and they're pre-recorded. Yeah, it's just good times. Oh, TED Talks Tech. Yeah. Sorry. I had mentioned briefly Taekwondo, the competitions that I was a part of, and not many, points like in Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai is absolutely not how Taekwondo tournaments went down. It wasn't full contact MMA style brawling. It's very rigid. So it's you and an opponent, and you set up, and it's almost like in a samurai film. There, you know, like the master samurais wouldn't have these epic showdowns. It would come down to like one strike. Those are my favorite. Like, you build up the suspense and a sword flashes and then one person falls. Like, that's it. That's like the limit. Taekwondo tournaments were often very much like that. If there's more than like three or four strikes, that was super exciting. There was none of this like rolling around and throwing people and like throwing elbows and like total open body. It's like very limited target zones and you're padded. And in mine, I don't even think headshots were allowed. So you would still be wearing headgear, but you would get points deducted if you hit someone in the head. Cause I was really, really young too. I was like 9 when I got to see my first one. So they might be different now, cause I haven't been to a Taekwondo competition in like 30 years. But that's what we were, that's what we were sort of taught when it comes to, competition. Oh, Simon says hypno. Absolutely. Just holding your guard up for 3 minutes is brutal. Throwing jabs for 3 minutes, man, completely winded me. It was so bad. McGorkin, we know the LaRussos are using iPhone 13s. They're using iPhone 13s, but not iPhone 13 Pros. And they're very concerned about when they're going to get ProMotion for the better screen on their $800 plus phones. Ha ha. There's my Apple hate for the podcast. Hoo-hoo. Oh, yeah. Simon says hypno. Jiu-jitsu for kids is great until you hear, my bedtime is now 11 p.m. You tap or you'll be sleeping in 10 seconds. So if I get my daughter into jiu-jitsu, I'm going to be curious. Like, I want to experience what she's going to experience. I'm going to have to take at least some rudimentary beginner adult classes just in rolling around, because again, it's something that I want to be able to participate with. If I teach her dance, I can dance with her. If we do a dance class, we'll be able to dance together. If I get her into jiu-jitsu, I want to know what that's going to be like. So I'm as much shopping for her as I am for myself in experiences. As I get older, I still want to learn and try new things too. Sorry, I just caught that double plus. You want to go? Come on, bro, let's do this. Oh, dude, Dave. I have so many friends in the restaurant industry that like are practically crippled now. I got plantar fasciitis and it destroyed my legs. It's not great. And again, like, I will always support and fight for initiatives to unionize fast food and restaurant workers. I mean, my buddy, he now works in post-production. I remember like catching him at the end of a shift. He loved working in Asian fusion and sushi restaurants. And I would catch him after a shift and like he'd be limping out to his car, like barely able to stand. And plantar fasciitis, man, just wrecked him. It's such destructive, repetitive, hard impact kinds of work. And Metri, exactly. Why are our bodies so squishy and weak? Every repeated movement seems to destroy us. Because we are not good at small, fine detail, repetitive movements. As primate, omnivore, hunter, gatherers, we haven't evolved into a state where we're really good at tiny little precise mechanical motions on repeat all day, every day. That's not what our biology commands of us. You know, we're supposed to be stalking prey in tall grass and then also we're not bad at farming. Oh, Gabaletta. Okay, same thing. If you just stand on tile all day, you destroy your flexibility and it kills your legs. It's so bad for you. You need orthopedic old person squishy shoes if you're in your 20s. Gabaletta, working in automotive retail where you stand for over 8 hours a day for years, you feel it regardless how padded your shoes are. This is why we have standing padded mats behind the counters to somewhat help. And it's such a little help. And so, like, I caught that. One of the Starbucks that started talking about unionizing, apparently the upper management removed all of their rubber mats. And I can't think of anything more vile and insidious. I have $15 on a Starbucks gift card, and I don't even really know what to do with it. I might as well use that up, because I really genuinely don't want to support Starbucks anymore if that's what they do to their employees that are talking about unionizing. They removed the rubber padded mats. That makes the job more dangerous, because it makes the ground slipperier if anything gets wet. I wonder if occasionally stuff spills in a Starbucks. But without rubber floor mats, now you're more prone to injuries, and it just makes standing for hours a day significantly more uncomfortable. I can't think of, in a job like Starbucks, where your gig is, let me sell you a muffin and pour you a coffee, I can't think of any reaction more insidious than taking away the basic safety of floor mats and the tiny modicum of comfort of being able to stand on something that isn't hard tile. How flipping evil do you have to be to cut a perk like standing on floor padding at a Starbucks? That's grotesque. So I'm not patronizing my local Starbucks anymore. Liberal angst, liberal rage. It's all I can do. Oh, Aditya, I totally feel this too. Recently purchased a lot of Steam games during their summer sale, but don't have time to play them because I'm traveling to and from your university and public transport. Is there any way I can enjoy all of my Steam games on the go without inconveniencing the other passengers by pulling out a big laptop for my on-the-go gaming sessions? I'm really glad you brought this up. Now, I don't know if any of you guys have heard about this thing. This is totally brand new. It's a little under the radar. I guess like maybe only some of the uber nerds would even know about it. It's called a Steam Deck. Now, this is a tiny little PC. It's like a gaming laptop, but it's built into controller grips. And like Aditya, like you were asking, you can play your Steam games on the go on your Steam Deck. It's such a bad joke, and I love it so much. Gabaletta. Every time I interview people for my line of work, they are oblivious to the fact that standing for over 6 hours every day, 5 days a week, 50 weeks out of the year, it puts a toll on your body. It's so rough. It's really so bad. Simon says, Hypno, the quote, "I was wrong" videos are the herpes of tech on YouTube. I'm trying to think, like, when was the last time I picked something up and I used it and I really felt like I had completely mischaracterized it? And I can't think. Someone please slap me around if I've put out a video where I thought, like, hey, I thought this was going to be really terrible, but I was wrong. I can't think of anything where I was so off the mark that I felt I needed to do, like, a video apology. The last time I was absolutely, like, 100% incorrect was on the iPhone headphone adapter. When we lost the headphone jack and we got that stupid dongle, I was measuring the output, and I really genuinely believed that it was just a pass-through. And then like the day after, I made a video just where I kind of commented offhand, like, this is the audio performance of this new iPhone. It's actually a tiny bit worse for things like distortion. I think this is a pass through, blah, 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 blah. Someone actually like cracked one open and there was a DAC inside. And I like that next day had to put out another video saying like, I was completely incorrect. The measurements were on point. This dongle performs worse than the headphone jack on the iPhone 6, but I was wrong for what I thought was inside the dongle. I really hate those, you know, iPhone user uses Android for a month. And then like, you know, oh, this iPhone is the worst. And then a week later, this iPhone blows my mind. I was totally wrong. The drama dance is the worst. Because there's something like, in our brains, there's something so fun about the true, honest, having your mind changed experience. Especially when it's something from bad to good. Like, there's something so great about that. But the people that try to cram that into an algorithm are not great. It's not fun. Oh, dude, Sammy, I know it, man. Kitchen is my favorite place in the house, and being Italian makes it, just like Juan says, it's my place of peace and creativity. I take flower macros for my outdoor zen hobby. I like to roll around in the dirt and take pretty pictures up close of tiny plants. But then if it's home, it's like, I got to be working on a marinara. Maybe I'm just, you know, boiling some brats in a nice ale, and I get to drink a little of that ale while I'm boiling those brats. You know, like, it's just the mechanical and the artistic and the flavorful. I love my Instant Pot. I like cranking all the burners on my stove. It is just so necessary. And again, you start getting to a point like, hey, you know, there's that really nice Italian restaurant down the street, but I kind of like my cacciatore better than their cacciatore. So why don't I just go to the grocery store and get some really good sausage? That little Italian deli that's up there, I'll get some really good sausage and some real good looking grape tomatoes. I'll just boil those in a red wine reduction until they burst. And my wife's like, yeah, maybe you should do that. And then I know I married well, because we're both really thinking with our stomachs. Ah, so good. So good. Oh, Farhan. My condolences, man. It's been a hectic day for me and my whole family because of my dad who passed away yesterday. And thanks in advance for the stream. I'm really sorry to hear that. I hope you and your family are doing well. I hope you're able to take the time to console each other and find those memories and celebrate that life. And no apologies necessary for a wacky little stream on Twitch. Other people in this chat already beat me to it in the condolences. And again, this is why I hang out with these people, because they're the good people. And I hope you and yours are able to celebrate and to mourn and to remember and to forge memories, new memories based on those experiences, to celebrate the life of someone that you cared about. This is the time to be with people you care about and who care about you. And as mentioned with my little rambling there about working in the kitchen, what comforts you and what helps you remember and what helps bring those people together. And I hope you're taking care of yourself and that you're getting enough to eat and that you get a good night's sleep. So you don't have to worry about sticking out the last 15 minutes of my podcast. Go be with some loved ones. That's rough. My sincere condolences. Oh no. Okay, Dustadori, we can talk about this for just a minute here. Hold on, I just gotta ban someone that I just saw pop up. Okay. Dustadori writes, I know you just said you don't like sucking the air out of other people's streams, but I loved you trouncing over people in their Twitter spaces. Seeing people get upset over you laying down facts was awesome. So that's the kind of conflict that I just don't enjoy, because I feel so much of this should be more apparent, but we have a lot of feelings, right? We were talking, this isn't necessarily a bad thing, and I'm not trying to shame anyone in here, but like I said, you know, earlier in the stream, I got into a conversation with some folks just talking about the perception of OnePlus and the devaluation of their phones. Oh, their phones drop in value so quickly. It's like they're not worth anything after a year. Okay. If you look at OnePlus in a vacuum and you see a OnePlus 9 Pro that originally retailed for like $899 or $999, somewhere in that ballpark, and then you go to Swappa and you see that they're selling for around $400, you'd say like, yeah, that's a huge drop in value. But that's just OnePlus. You've got blinders on, right? So that's just a feeling. How does OnePlus compare against Samsung, Motorola, LG, all of these other manufacturers? And OnePlus actually performs pretty well in that devaluation. And so, like, the last Twitter space that I actually did join where I felt like I was being a little amped up and a little over-aggressive was just talking about, well, this Pixel 6 camera performance is awful. And, you know, there are no benefits and it's all just bugs. And I can show you, like, a night mode photo that I took that was better processed from my Pixel 4. And you're like, yes. When we acknowledge that certain camera algorithms need to be retrained for a different sensor, obviously the sensor that these algorithms were originally trained on would perform better. But you also just talked about low light performance and depth of field and all of the photographic elements that go into this and the phenomenally better telephoto sensor. We can't sit there and say, well, there's been no improvements and it's all nothing but bugs. And I remember like coming down hard and you're like, there was a trade, but I still feel like the Pixel 6 Pro was an upgrade over the 5 and the 4 XL. You know, like, you need to know what you're looking for. And that's the thing that bothers me the most about those kinds of conversations. It's like, you're obviously ignoring, or you're willfully ignoring, a whole bunch of data points that do improve the conversation. But at the flip side, you're picking out, you're cherry picking this one negative. And it's the same thing, like, oh, Pixel 6s, their software is so buggy. And you're like, you know what? I'm talking to a lot of Samsung owners who aren't terrifically thrilled about the current update status on the S22s. But we're not digging into Samsung the same way, because the Samsung narrative is they put out more updates. They don't put out better updates. They just put out more updates. And then you got to get into the nuance. Like, I've only gotten one major OTA on the Motorola Edge, but I'm getting weekly patches for a ton of the Motorola specific software and hardware on this phone. When was the last time you saw an update specifically for DeX on a Samsung? Because I've gotten multiple app updates through Google Play for Ready 4, and Ready 4 has improved in functionality. Not tremendously, it was really good from the start, but just some of the little consistency things that I saw when I first got my hands on the phone have been completely patched up. The camera performance has improved significantly, especially for the app layout. I mean, things like that were updated through app updates, not through massive OTAs. So I don't like that sick, hostile, confrontational thrill of being a debate bro. You know, like, I just want techies that will acknowledge when they've got a blind spot. And it's like, it takes so much work to undo just the casual truthiness stuff that we throw out there. Oh, well, we know that apples are gooder for this. And like, are they? And how do you measure that? And what's the criteria? And how do you make that claim? Because that, so far, that just sounds like you listened to an Apple commercial or an Apple press event, and then you just repeated what Apple said. You know, like, Samsung, why do we keep promoting them as the de facto or as the standard? BBK brands outsell Samsung. I think Xiaomi brands are pretty close to outselling Samsung. Samsung's sitting on a mountain of phones that they can't sell. I think the S22 and S22 Plus are even further falling in terms of sales. Samsung in South Korea is selling fewer and fewer and fewer phones over that $400 price tier. And right now, their shining example of success are the Z Flip and the Note 22. Those are very specialty phones that are only going to sell in small numbers. If the Note 22 makes up more than, you know, like, I don't know, what, 5% of the total sales numbers for Samsung over 2022, I'll be very happy, but I'll be kind of surprised. You know, last year Samsung was on the hook for over 250 million in phone sales, in units sold, and less than 10% were all of the Galaxy S phones combined. You know, that's lower sales numbers than the iPhone SE. The iPhone SE sold around 23 to 25 million units over the last year, and it was considered a not very popular phone. Samsung, all of their Galaxy S devices in total, I think were about the same as the iPhone SE. And we're sitting here still pretending that Samsung deserves this kind of position in the market through basically sheer force of advertising. The only reason they occupy that is because they spend $10 billion a year marketing the Samsung brand. Not because their products genuinely are better, just because they spend the most to tell you about their products. And if we're techies, I feel we should be able to untangle the emotions of marketing against the real-world performance of that device. And so I don't jump into Twitter spaces anymore because it's just too much. It's too much work just to get to the conversation where we're actually talking about reality. I have to spend an hour saying, well, that's not really true. These are the real numbers. This was the marketing data. This is the sales numbers. This is how they immediately devalued their products. These are the sales that they went through. They made this claim about units sold. Now they're sitting on 50 million Galaxy A series phones that aren't selling. And then you've got to unpack all of that. And it sounds like you're just making a bunch of excuses, but that's the real data, because it's so easy for someone to say, well, yeah, but Samsung's the top option. That's like a baseless claim and with no criteria, and you can't quantify it, and you've not defined anything. So I've got to burn a significant amount of mental energy to chip away at that lazy emotional claim. And at the end of it, I'm still going to have somebody say, but, you know, like, nuh-uh. It's just so rough, man. Yeah, it's real bad. Oh, Dave Burns, all in caps. If you want to support a local union effort, go to the store and wear something pro-union and talk to employees that you support them. Continue to do this even after they win their bid. The company will continue to try to union bust until a contract is won or the union dies. I feel like we're getting to that point. Like, if I knew my local Starbucks was a union shop, I would be doing more business there. Again, right now I'm in that time and money crunch where it's like I'm just not supporting businesses that I feel are doing harm to those conversations. But I need to be more proactive in, you know, going out of my way to make a more visible effort of supporting businesses that are doing business the way that I want them to. Simon says, no, catch a Tory can. My catch a Tory is really good. I mean, like, it's pretty brutal. I do like a sausage, chicken, and mushroom catch a Tory. And, oof, man, it is just all kinds of Italian tomato-y, you know, sort of acid and sweet. Got some umami flavors going on in there. I like shave these bell peppers like as thin as I possibly can so they kind of string into the sauce. Mwah! Chef's kiss. I'm just mopping that up, the big old hunk of like of bread and butter, and just, oh, it's fatty and salty and so many good flavors. I get like just a little bit of red pepper going on in there, so it's got just a little bit of a zing. It's not a bite, it's not spicy. I'm just saying, man, so good. So good times. Yeah, Barry Johnson, 50 million unsold phones for old Sammy, and this is not good. We just saw there was another analyst piece, like, phones over $400, Apple now occupies 63% of the market. That is really not good for Android to see premium sales slipping in that direction. If you're a fan of competition, if you're a fan of getting better features and better functionality on newer devices, increasingly, that's going to mean Android manufacturers looking at the success of the iPhone and just making their phones more like iPhones, which is going to further destabilize the Android market and just encourage more people to buy iPhones. The more Samsung makes their phone like the iPhone, the less phones they sell. Peak Samsung was Galaxy S10. The Galaxy S10 was fundamentally a polar opposite powerhouse device, in no way, shape, or form resembling what you would get with an iPhone. Galaxy S20, a little more like an iPhone. S21, let's cut a few more corners. S22, let's really cut back on hardware. You know what? I see why we've got a downward sales trend from the S10, right? Like, that's not difficult to suss out. We're pretty clear. You remove features, you cut corners, you make the performance worse, and you keep charging higher prices. Why wouldn't you just go out and buy an iPhone? This is the best Apple advertisement that Apple isn't paying for that they could have asked for. Samsung underperforming like this is catastrophic to the entire Android ecosystem. And I really feel the South Korean style of building phones is rapidly dying. And I don't think Samsung has the talent to turn that ship around quickly. I think we're in for some really tough years if you like South Korean style phones. I'm happy Sony's still kicking as a niche offering. BBK has been rocking my socks. The BBK style is really clicking with me. I dig what Vivo and what OnePlus are able to accomplish. But it's not good if you want good premium tier devices that can go toe-to-toe with iPhone Pros. Man, Apple has that premium upper expensive market on lock right now, and that makes me very anxious. I'm really not thrilled.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Oh, yeah, a couple other conversations, things about, like, I wonder, Alsa Bakley asking about the Nothing phone, a missed an opportunity of a return to basics approach. I really feel like Nothing is trying to play the same OnePlus game, like when OnePlus first launched, except now we have brands like Redmi and Poco. Like, we've got Realme's that compete exceedingly well on price. I was just holding up, I got this Vivo. You know, this is the full-spec Vivo, 12 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of storage, OLED screen, reasonably good dual-camera sensor device, Snapdragon 870. In international markets, this is going to be a $450 phone. This hardware is insane at $450. And if you can step down to 128 gigs of storage, you can get this thing for under $400 in the mid-high 300s. Nothing has such a huge hill to climb to play the aspirational game when iQOO, Realme, Redmi, Poco, we have real competition in that flagship killer performance space right now. We just got done with the X4 GT and the F4. Me and TK kind of bouncing off of each other, looking at like really reasonably priced high performance handsets. And the Nothing coming in with two camera sensors, probably a good screen, and a Snapdragon 778, that phone's not like $250, I think they're going to get murked. And at $250, then they still have to compete against entry-level Poco C series or like an Infinix. You know, like an Infinix is a really good phone at around $200. I've got the TCL. I've got a TCL here with the Dimensity 700 that can almost catch up to a Snapdragon 765. So the Nothing will definitely outperform this phone. But this has a stylus, a headphone jack. It's going to be the free-on contract phone for T-Mobile. Like, that's what Nothing has to face right now. What you get as the free-on contract phone today is a remarkably performant device. It is so much better than just covering the basics, and I sometimes tap on an email. Like, this is a real functional multitasking device. It's not a hardcore power user phone, but it is a phenomenal productivity phone. I don't think Nothing has that conversation ready. The Pixel 6a, if the Nothing and the Pixel 6a are sold in the same markets, the 6a is going to crush the Nothing. But I really feel like the Nothing is mostly going to be sold in regions where Google isn't going to ship the 6a. Actually, Barry and folks are already kind of mentioning stuff like that in the chat. Yeah, Gabaletta, don't go far. The Pixel 6a is looking like a steal, especially here in the U.S. So you have the image sensors that Google is wonderfully performant on. They've trained all of their camera algorithms on those smaller image sensors. You've got a Tensor. I'm betting you're probably only going to get like a 60 hertz display, which I don't think anyone shopping in the mid-range is going to be too tragically upset about. And you're in line for a ridiculously long period of software updates for a phone that's going to be sub $500. I don't see any weak spot in the 6A except for the headphone jack. That to me is like the last little remnant where someone who was on a Pixel 4A might feel a bit of a pinch. I really feel it's a bad play to get rid of headphone jacks on your sort of medium mid-ranger phones, but that's Google's thing. And again, you're making your phone more like the iPhone because then they can charge more for accessories. It's a value add for the company. I get it. I think it's a bad play. But you go up against the Nothing and the 6A, even if we're talking like a $50 price difference, let's say the Nothing launches at $399, and the 6A launches at $449. 6A. That's like the obvious choice. Go with the 6A. Get that Tensor. Get that better multitasking and the higher performance device. And especially with the refinement that we've seen on Tensor, I bet you the battery life wouldn't be too much of a win. I bet it would be a win, but I don't think it would be a dominant win for the Nothing. Because the 700 series SoCs are very good at managing decent, reasonably high performance against better power draw. Tensor definitely pulls more juice, but I think its fallback on those A76 cores actually helps more than on some of these other like 8 Gen 1s or 888s. So again, head-to-head, I'd go Tensor. I really feel like that's the better play. If there's within a $50 price difference, if Nothing can cut $100, well, then that's a different conversation. But then you're still in a ballpark where you've got to fight phones that have like Snapdragon 870s. You know, like it's such a rough place for Nothing to be. And I think they're playing a game that doesn't really exist today. The game feels like it's the old OnePlus playbook when we didn't have good disruptive price options and flagship killers. Now, off the top of my head, I can think of like 4 or 5 brutally competitive flagship killer style devices from different labels that will probably ship to regions that the Nothing is sold. I'm not confident in this strategy. Yeah, McCorkran. Yeah, see, exactly. The iPhone 13 has a 60 hertz display. It's an $800 phone. And nobody is calling that dead on arrival. In fact, we're seeing, like, if you go to the Apple subreddits, you'll still see the occasional person like, so, hey, guys, when do you think the regular iPhone will get a ProMotion display? It sure would be nice on my $800 phone to have better than 60 hertz refresh. Am I right, guys? Guess I'll keep giving Apple my money, because that'll change their behavior. If I just keep buying exactly the thing that Apple is selling, eventually they'll listen to me and give me something different. That's how it works. I feel bad. I don't really feel bad. Oh, Gabaletta, that's pretty good. Saw an ad for the Pixel 6 Pro for $699 when you port your phone number to Fi. Yeah, if you were in the market, now wouldn't be a terrible time to get a Pixel 6 Pro on sale. I think it's a little trickier because I'm not sure what Google's strategy is going to be. Like, when the Pixel 7 arrives, are we going to see the Pixel 6 evaporate? Or will it hang on for a little bit just because of whatever stock might be in transition? Because, like, the month after a Pixel 7 launches, maybe that's the right time to pick up a deal on a Pixel 6. But I don't know. I mean, even if you're talking Pixel 6 and not the Pixel 6 Pro, it's tricky because the price is already so close to the 6A. I think Google's going to be very precious about how much that price falls, because you don't want to disrupt Pixel A sales with a Pixel 6 on sale. I just said Google and Pixel, and six phones on my desk just lit up. So that's tricky. I really think, like, as soon as the 7 launches, the 6 is just going to, I mean, it's going to disappear fast. And it'll be up to whatever stock is left in, like, on carrier stores. So if you're looking for the best possible deal on a Pixel, I think your window is going to be very narrow if you were hoping to pay less for a Pixel 6 Pro. I don't know. I don't have any good data on that. And genuinely, Google has been inconsistent. You know, like, Pixel 5 disappeared before Pixel 6 came out, right? They stopped making them earlier than we expected, and they went out of manufacturing way faster. And I think they've been kind of waffling back and forth. Like, Pixel 4 stuck around for a little bit longer than I thought it would. Pixel 5 disappeared faster. And Pixel 6 is something entirely new. It's a completely different manufacturing line. It's their own unique SoC. And I don't know how long Tensor 1 is going to stick around. We won't really know what life is like for Tensor fabrication until we see this Pixel tablet. Because I'm pretty confident that tablet's going to have a Tensor also, but is it going to be Tensor 1 or is it going to be Tensor 2? Pixel 6a is going to keep Tensor 1 around. I think the tablet should probably have Tensor 1, and then the new phone will launch the new SoC, the Tensor 2. The mechanics on this and the flow chart and the calendar on when all these things are supposed to arrive is pretty crazy. But I wouldn't be too angsty about picking up a Pixel 6 Pro on sale right now. You'd be getting a monster phone, excellent cameras, great performance, and you're still in line for years of software support direct from Google. $700 for a Pixel 6 Pro, and then you're on Google Fi, and the rates and the plans for Google Fi aren't terrible. Like, that's pretty good. You could do way worse than a Google Fi deal on a Pixel 6 Pro. See, this is what I mean, Dustadore. I got a Google alert from Android Authority talking down Tensor 2 already, and it's not even out. It's so frustrating. Yeah, Kappa Cash. Sadly, already articles out that Tensor 2 is not that good and that it's going to disappoint. Again, how would we know? And Tensor 1 wasn't great out of the box. It did take some updates, and that whole pulled update was definitely embarrassing. But it really comes down to what you do on your phones. The camera processing and performance has improved. It's not as fast as Vivo when it comes to low light. That V1 that BBK is using is still voodoo to me, that it can chew up image data that fast. But Google's the second place, and they've been near the top of the image performance processing charts since the Pixel 4. When they put in machine learning cores on the Pixel 4, that thing was just in incredible. Pixel 4 still hangs with 888 in terms of chewing up image data, like rendering video and editing photos. Pixel 4 was so underappreciated. But for my Pixel 6 over here, for my Pixel 6, the benchmarks still lag. Single core is pretty good because you've got two X1 cores in here. Multi-core is still often like 15% slower, somewhere in that ballpark. It's not scoring nearly as high, maybe even 20% in some. Like, I've gotten some multi-core scores on HN1 out to around like 3,700 on Geekbench, and this still routinely falls in below 3,000, like right at the 2,900s. Those numbers don't really mean a whole lot, though, unless you're trying to do something that actually taxes the CPU. So here's the fun little secret. I put out audio versions of my podcasts, right? You can go to somegadgetguide.com for the weekly show that I do, the Monday Morning Tech Chat show. And then I also do just like a quick and dirty audio scrub, just pulling the audio. It's not a mixed podcast. It's just our voices for Best of Our Week. All of that podcasting is done from a phone. And very regularly over the last year, most of those podcasts have been mixed down from my Pixel 6 Pro. So I take 2 hours of audio and I download that audio to this phone, and then I put the little bumpers and tags, and I've got like a little template so I can cut the audio and put in ads and little breaks and stuff. And then I push render, and this Pixel 6 Pro will outperform my Threadripper with a 2080 Ti in cutting that MP3. It is targeted, specific, focused application of an ARM processor versus this huge, beefy workstation under my desk and the different software that I run for things like audio editing and processing on my workstation. It is more immediate, it's quicker to download, it's faster to render. It's a little slower to edit. I am faster at editing on the desktop, but I cut it all, I render it faster, and it's ready to upload back to my podcast hosting on Pinecast way faster than I can do from a desktop workstation. That's what we're in. Are you cutting two-hour podcasts on your phone? Are you editing and rendering 4K video? This is the type of functionality that we need to start applying where we're really taxing an SoC to see what the comparable performance differences are. I can get this work done faster on an HN1. But if I use an HN1 to process the audio, it's a couple seconds faster on a phone that drains the battery faster and arrives at a much higher temperature threshold than what the Pixel 6 can do. So I'm being very specific in what kinds of use and laptop style computing and desktop grade functionality that I'm looking for. And Tensor has been great. It definitely will lose to an 8 Gen 1 in a number of these showdowns, but it loses with the time it takes to process, but it processes cooler and uses less battery doing it. So I feel like that's a good compromise. I'm fine with the Pixel 6 for that. So anyone who's complaining about Tensor really doesn't understand SoC or CPU design. What I think Google is doing that's very interesting is this stacked multiple big core, then smaller medium-sized core, and then into a quad core, smaller cores. Tensor 2 could be a very different arrangement. And because it'll be a different arrangement, we can't judge it by the same applications. Like, it's going to be better in some things and it's going to be worse in others. An 8 Gen 1 is better than Tensor in some things, and it's worse than a Tensor in others. And this is what an article from an Android website seems woefully unprepared to discuss. Because if all you're doing is just grading a bunch of AnTuTu scores, you genuinely have no idea how that phone will perform real world. If I just show you Geekbench scores, you would have completely incorrect ideas on what phone would be faster for documents, what phone would be more powerful for video, what phone would be better for gaming. This phone has better GPU benchmark scores. Doesn't matter. You get 5 minutes into a game and the thermals start climbing, you have a completely different conversation on what phone plays that game better. And you can't talk about that unless you really do it. So I have zero confidence and zero faith in conversations built just on Geekbench scores or like a cursory examination of, well, it might have three of the A55 cores, which means the lower power performance isn't going to be as gooder. Okay, that's grotesque speculation. And even when you get the phone, when you're having conversations like that, like I don't think you're even going to know how to test the phone to see if any of that's true. Like, what are you going to do? Sit there with like a super high speed camera shooting 1,000 frames per second to see if it opens up Instagram a fraction of a millisecond faster? That's average consumers won't get anything out of this phone. And you're like, yeah, because average consumers overwhelmingly buy under $400 in Android land. We just saw the market data on Apple eating up more of the higher than $400 market. So I, like I said, I can't be bothered. Yeah, okay, Barry Johnson, that's right. They did stop the 5 earlier. I was almost positive that it was the Pixel 5 that Google pulled the manufacturing on pretty quick. And it was always going to be the holdover phone. You could tell that Google didn't really want to make the Pixel 5 as the phone that they made. I just feel like they couldn't get ahead of their Tensor manufacturing. The Pixel 6 should have been the Pixel 5, and it took them an extra year, but they were able to staple together a very reasonable placeholder phone, even if it was a little bit more of a mid-ranger. I haven't even read any of these articles. Dustadori saying they're saying because it's using ARM V8 and not ARM V9. Okay. What? All right. The justification being like, if it's ARM V8, it's not going to be as gooder. It's like saying, oh no, it's Intel 10th gen and not Intel 11th gen. But what core is it? Well, I'm comparing a core i9 10th gen against a core i3 11th gen. It's the wrong gen. You need the better gen, bro. Do you even gen, bro? If you have ARM V8 and you're rocking X1 style cores, which I'd imagine the Tensor 2 will probably be rocking X2 style cores, and you can work on the efficiency and you've got a good fabrication and a good die and you have Google's aptitude for software and optimization, the benchmark scores will suck and everything else will be better. The benchmark scores on a Pixel are not great and the performance is neck and neck with 888 pluses and some of the more heavily managed HN1s. Like, to sit there and say, well, it would be gooder. What they should do is give us the gooder ARM V version means nothing. It means less than nothing because it is now occupied space in a conversation, wasted brain power, wasted oxygen, and it's still pure speculation. And that kind of stuff is awful. Again, I hate that tech conversations are now built on that kind of hot take mentality, because it just distracts from the real conversation when we get our hands on it, and then people like me have to work 10 times harder to undo all of the damage done from stupid speculation. Now when I get a Tensor 2, I'm going to have a whole bunch of people from Android blogs going, yeah, but it's ARM V8, and that's not as gooder, and it needs to be gooder for the monies. Why is Google not making it? It should just work and be gooder. And you're like, yeah, but did you see the video? I showed you. It's rendering. Are you rendering 4K 60 frame per second video? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's doing the video the same. It needs to be gooder. Why can't it just be gooder, bro? I hate it so much. Dave Burns. It's a little more nuanced, but basically, because it's not the newest gen, it can't have the X2 cores. Oh, no. Yeah, I'm not bothered by that at all. When I can see what a Pixel 6 Pro can do real world against an 8 Gen 1, the hardest fight Google's going to have, if they're ARM V8 and they're still on an X1 core, the phones coming out that are Dimensity 9000 and Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 will have a performance per watt advantage over a Tensor 2 using X1 cores. So that will be a concern, absolutely. But how do we demonstrate that concern? Is that a concern for Twitter? No. Is it a concern for checking your email? Is it a concern for camera operation? What is the concern? Because I'll be able to demonstrate. If I can get my hands on a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1, I'm very anxiously excited to see what Qualcomm has done with optimizations from TSMC. But when I demonstrate that, I'm going to be talking about rendering 4K 60 frame per second video in PowerDirector and in KineMaster. So then we need to ask, what is the likely usage of that gadget in the target market who's interested in a Pixel? By how much are they going to suffer a deficit? If I go to you and say, I've got 1 minute of 4K 60 frame per second video with a watermark and transitions and a soundtrack, and you know, I'm going to render this as a high quality video to put up on YouTube, and an 8 Plus Gen 1 can finish this 1 minute video in PowerDirector in a minute 15, and a Tensor 2 finishes it in a minute 20. What is that going to mean to you? If we're talking about, what, a 5% delta in performance in a high-tier application like video rendering? This is where I'm speculating, because I don't have an 8 Plus Gen 1, and I don't have a Tensor 2, but looking at these trends and knowing what I know about ARM V8 and Tensor 1 and X1 cores, I feel like there's data that we can point to say, what is the likelihood that we're going to see phones in 2023 that can radically outperform a Pixel 7, and by what degree will they outperform that phone? Because I also don't have high expectations that Google's going to put out a $1,300 phone. And when we're talking Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1, I think it's pretty likely that those first phones that get it are going to be at least $1,000, probably a little more. So what is our concern? Is our concern that a Tensor 2 can't batch photo process raw files from a Sony A7 as quickly as the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1? Because I'll be able to show you. I'll definitely be able to show you, and I am almost 98% certain that I'm going to get my hands on a Tensor 2, and I'm going to put it through something like a ridiculous batch photo processing test, and it will perform that test slower than the fastest Snapdragons. And I still don't think that that's going to be a deal breaker. Because I don't believe it's going to be so slow at completing that task that the person who's interested in buying a Pixel will decide that they can't suffer that performance hit. Because I pick up a Pixel expecting the absolute best features for call and data management, assistant, the integration with smart features and home automation, and that it's going to be still the most brilliantly easy point-and-shoot camera experience on the market today. That's what the bread-and-butter Pixel experience is. The Pixel 6 Pro is not a pro because of the camera. The camera is the best consumer point-and-shoot, one-shutter button press on the market. The Pixel 6 Pro is a pro because it's the best professional assistant phone on the market. That when you interact with Google and speech to text and transcription and recording and taking a call and not staying on hold for the call, the phone will put the call on hold for you when you're ready to take the call. That's what a personal assistant does. And that's why you call the Pixel 6 Pro a Pro. That's what a Tensor 2 is going to be built for. Are we judging by what the claims of the manufacturer are, or are we judging because someone ran a Geekbench and the number was bigger? How make bigger number in Geekbench? Like, this is ridiculous. It's pants on head, completely stupid to be talking about high-performance pocket computers in this sort of limited, better make sure Samsung can win something kind of way. Yeah, TwinFolk, I mean, like, unlike most tech YouTubers, I like to wait until the device is in my hand before I give the verdict. I refuse to put benchmarks in my videos. I feel more of us need to put purpose-built benchmarks into our videos. It's not Geekbench, it's not Antutu, it's not StorageBench, it's not any of these synthetic applications that are really easy to manipulate. It's things that you can reliably and consistently test. I've been running the same video editing and rendering test since I was at Pocket now. It's the same file. I put the file on the phone and the phone puts the timeline up and I push render and I can time that and I can tell you what the differences have been from generation to generation and I can tell you where scores have improved and where scores have gotten worse over major OS updates. Because again, going from like Android 10 to Android 12, a lot of older phones are now suffering in performance because of the new structures for storage in Android. That's why we need benchmarking. But we need to benchmark like laptop and desktop reviewers do. Like, you need to watch Gamers Nexus and Hardware Unboxed and then go, oh, those are reliable, consistent tests that have real-world applications. They do some synthetic tests, but then they also back that up with real games and real programs, and they say, okay, well, this is like a good balance, and we can see where these scores influence each other, and that this is a product that performs better than we thought it would for the price, and we can make a purchasing recommendation for someone who's interested in doing this. And that is what's completely lacking from the phone conversation. A few more people are doing better with games. That's great. But gaming is just one small niche of the greater pocket computer conversation. And we need to expand into other things that can impact people in their day-to-day lives. And also point to places where, like, hey, maybe you do want to learn how to do this from a phone because it's going to be so much faster and more immediate than waiting until you can pull open a laptop and move some data over and then get Wi-Fi or tether to your phone and get this thing uploaded from there. You could just do it from your phone and be done. And getting to done is way more important than, but did you have the more popular laptop to do it? Did you have the gooder phone? This phone has the better Antutu score. Maybe that's the one you need, bro. It doesn't work that way. And consumers know that it doesn't work that way. It's techies that have forgotten it should work that way. Yeah, Twin Folk. I mean, I got real sad. I was in a podcast with someone that I really like and I enjoy their work. Juan, you're just supposed to just clunkily use the device on pre-release software and then tweet about how you can't recommend it to average consumers, LMAO. I was in a conversation about the OnePlus and just like they were praising the OnePlus 10 for all of these improvements and how much better the camera was performing. There's no more of that weird shutter after action lag and, you know, the fluidity of the user interface. And this is so great. And we're like, hey, yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I think the OnePlus 10 Pro has been great, but like, haven't you picked up a OnePlus 9 Pro? Because so many of these improvements came to the OnePlus 9 Pro on Android 12. And they point blank admitted, oh, yeah, I haven't really picked up my OnePlus 9 Pro since the review embargo. And you're like, what are we doing? I mean, to even just not be aware. How? How do we get there? Because there's a narrative about how the OnePlus 9 Pro is so laggy and terrible and OnePlus software. And I can't believe they're betraying us and Oxygen OS and Color OS and wah, 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 wah. And I pick up a OnePlus 9 Pro and they no longer have limits on 4K recording. 4K 60 used to be limited to 5-minute chunks. That's gone. You can record until the phone melts in your hand. It's going to be dropping frames and the clip will eventually fail and you'll run out of battery, but there's no more limit. You can just go. The only limit now is 4K 120. The OnePlus 9 Pro shoots 4K at 120 frames per second. Only Sony and now ZTE have devices that natively support that resolution at that frame rate. It's OnePlus 9 Pro. It's got it. 8K video at 30 frames per second from both the main sensor and the ultra wide. And ColorOS cleaned up all of that weird shutter lag, post-processing lag. It is so much more performant, so much longer lasting, and the battery life got better. You can miss me with OxygenOS. It was garbage software. ColorOS is so much better. And it's the backbone behind FunTouch. It's on all the Oppo phones. It's brilliant. And it drives me crazy because you just have a whole bunch of techies going, oh, but OnePlus betrayed me. What about my feelers? And you aren't paying attention to how much better the device actually got. So you didn't care. All you cared about was the label on the device and the trappings of that, like it was a fancy purse. If you get off on buying expensive purses, go do you. That's your thing. I can't make videos for that because I'm not into that. I don't care. I don't care about the label on the product. I care about what it can do. And if it genuinely does more better, then that's improvement and we should celebrate that. But that's not what's happening in the tech conversation right now. I just realized what time it is. I've been going for 2.5 hours here. Did I miss the Reddit plug? Oh, this is a pajama podcast. We have no idea where we're going to end up on a pajama podcast. You should check out the subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. It's a great place to find other people having these kinds of conversations where you aren't trapped by the YouTube algorithm. But I usually do that as the midway plug between the news block and the gadget block, and we never made it here. But this conversation was lovely, and thank you for letting me ramble on about health and fitness and diet. I didn't even have to harass you with my Vampire Survivors progress. So just real quick, because I'm proud of me. I was in Tetris. Let me get back to Vampire Survivors and launch Vampire Survivors. I've been playing this game for almost exactly a month, right? And I've been playing other games. Like I said, last night I was burning some time on Tetris Effect because I'm an old and I still absolutely love Tetris. But I just want to kind of flip this around here. You might not even be able to see. Let me see if I can like really put it up. Out of 120 unlocks, I'm at 109. And just last week, I finally killed Death. So Red Death Dude always comes to kill you at the end of your run in every stage of Vampire Survivors. And the end of last week, I managed to build a character that could take out Death. And I was so proud of myself. It was such a satisfying feeling after like 3.5 weeks of like really grinding this game to then be like, oh, I think I actually know how I can deal enough damage. Let me do it. And it worked beautifully, and it was great. And Vampire Survivors is so much fun. This new era of swarm games, I don't even know what to call them, because they're not roguelites, and they're not, like, adventure, twin-stick, arcade-y kinds of games. I just call them swarm games. There's an amazing clone of Vampire Survivors. What is it called? Grim Knight Heroes. So if you don't have like a PC or a laptop or a Steam Deck or something that you would play, Vampire Survivors doesn't look like it's ever going to come to mobile. But there's a game called Grim Knight Survivors. Let me get the whole name. Grim Knight Survivor. Where did it go? It's on my phone. Why can't I find the actual name of this? Excuse me. I'll leave it on the show notes for this week's episode, somegadgetguy.com. Same idea. You are this little character and you're running around and then just swarms of enemies keep attacking you. you've got to kind of dodge. And as you kill them, you get experience and your character sort of ranks up and you get new abilities. And the rounds are limited. So on Vampire Survivor, they just cap it at 30 minutes. On Grim Knight, I think they aim for 20-minute maps. So at 20 minutes, a major boss comes in, and if you can kill the boss, then the round is over. I don't know what it is about this structure. It is, like, the most addictive playstyle for someone like me. Because it's like a bullet hell game where, you know, you've got, like, those shooters where just lasers and missiles are flying all over the screen, and you've got to navigate your ship. There's an element of it that's like that. And then there's also just that little baby kind of action RPG element as you rank your character up and you get new abilities. And stapling those together is peanut butter jelly time. It's the best. I love it so much. So, as I kind of wrap this up, and my voice is actually starting to go here, so I should definitely get... Simon says Hypno is leaving too. So, I mean, that's pretty much show over at this point, folks. So, again, thank you, everybody. The pajama podcasts are always a completely unpredictable kind of gig. I never really know where we're going to go or what we're going to get into, but this was exactly the kind of conversation that I needed. I'm dealing with some pretty heavy life stuff, and I think we're all in situations, I think we're all in positions where, regardless of exactly what the news of the week is, stuff is getting kind of stressful. It really helps being able to seek out some communities and share. Even if this ends up becoming a little bit of talk therapy for a podcast, I'm not trying to dump on people. I'm trying to validate that we're all struggling with something. We're all facing unique challenges. I can't internalize what your challenge might be, but I can come to this type of a stream and say, I acknowledge that you are facing some difficulties. And they must be challenges for you, because I know I'm facing challenges that are unique to me. And we seem to have this shared experience between all of us. So when those times are the most fraught, when those times are the most difficult, it feels pretty good having some pals. Like, it feels really good having some friends. And especially in situations like this, knowing that in this chat are people that are likely to rise to the occasion and help out the folks that are around them. So where you probably don't get the kudos and the thanks that you deserve, it is always my honor and it is always my privilege to say thank you for being a good tech neighbor. And thank you for looking out, first of all, looking out for yourselves, taking care of yourselves so that you can do a good job of taking care of others. So on that note, we're going to wrap up the Pajama Podcast. Next week, we're going to be back into a regular format show. If anyone was catching this one fresh, more of a news block talking about tech and news and probably a little tech and politics, then a gadget block really digging into some of the review devices and some of the gear that we're using right now, especially taking a tour around the Gadget Lab, just constantly pulling stuff out to chat about. We've got some really fun things coming up. And this whole week, I've got videos ready to go. We're going to be talking longer-term use on the TCL Stylus 5G. We're going to be talking about the Moto Edge Plus, now that I can wrap up my my chat on the Folio case. I really want to get back to... I think I'll finally have the bandwidth, excuse me. Revisit Pixel 6 Pro, talk about some of the improvements there, and then also Duos. Duo 1 and Duo 2, every major update, they just keep getting better. And where I was very happy with like Duo 1 performance sort of early this year, what it's doing now is yet again another tier of polished, high performance, tablet style computing. And I wasn't really expecting it to be improved to this degree. So I definitely need to get back and share some of those experiences as well. While I wrap up some time with the Honor, I've got a really fun little desktop dock. I've got a fun little like Bluetooth connected dice game, which I think is just going to be fun for a very short, you know, like a 2 to 3 minute, hey, this is cool, roll some dice, D&D. like could be really fun. So I've got tons of stuff that's going to be coming out. Definitely keep an eye out for reviews.org and for Slit Deals. I'm going to be having some videos going out live there too. And folks, thank you so much. Everybody, I want you all to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you all back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. I love y'all. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.